This episode is brought to you by the Slash and Cast Podcast Network. Learn more at slashandcast.net.
You cut me too deep. I think I'm dying here, man.
Welcome to the 3B Video Deep Cut Podcast.
Watch a few movies, take a few notes.
It was fun.
Aw, yeah, it's that time again for another bi-weekly podcast with your hosts, Rotten Roger DeMarco, and...
It must be visiting hours, because my friend is back!
Evil Dead Inks in the back room of the defunct video store.
Yes. Goddamn, I love me some Leo Rossi, dude. It's about time that we got here.
You know, until you had said it, I totally didn't put two and two together. I was like, oh, that's the pervert guy from Halloween 2. I was like, he's in another part 2.
Mm-hmm. And he's kind of a pervert. So, awesome. But
I mean, he's more than kind of. I mean, he's like, this is the pervert's, like, last stop. Like,
yeah, this is Charles Manson pervert.
It's peeping on shit, looking, and then at some point you're like, all right, I'm ready to go full force into homicide now.
I would like to kill. I would like to kill some.
I've reached some women. I've reached my final form.
Critical mass.
Yep. Once the beard and hair meet in the same length spot, you're like, all right, I'm ready. It's like getting your official like game jersey.
Dude, I will say this before you jump into plot synopsis and stuff. I do love his like apartment slash lair. Like it's like a, it literally looks like a sewer. I think it is a sewer.
But it's like a high rise. Like it looks like he's like living behind a clock tower.
He lives in that dude's apartment from Malignant. Like just the fucking red neon light just blinks.
It looks like Doc Brown would have to walk through his living space to get to the giant clock face on the front of the building. That's what it feels
like. I love it though. I love it.
Yeah,
it's super cool.
And he totally has like a dad mentality of like, oh, let me show you my space. Here's all my girls. Look at my collection of things. Same exact shit when someone comes over here and they're like, oh, you want to come down and see the Elm Street collection? You want to see all the mannequins set up in the basement? Oh, you want to go over to Roger's place and see the video store set up in the basement? It's like the same kind of like energy level.
Yep, yep. And look at my knife. I got it. This is a good knife right here.
He tries so hard to make friends with this.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's lonely. Serial killers are lonely, man. They don't have no one to tell that they're murdering people.
I mean, that's part of the job description, though. If you're going to become a serial killer, you know, like, are you all right with isolation? Because you're going to have to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I guess there was no shock jock. He couldn't call into Howard Stern and be like, I've killed 14 prostitutes.
Well, I've done it again. Yeah, no weepy, the weepy cry killer thing. No, not here.
So for the good folks out there in internet land that have never seen Maniac Cop 2, Christian Hanna, do you want to give...
Whoa.
Shots fired from the Maniac Cop. Do you want to give a brief plot synopsis of this film?
I mean, is it? We never really establish if Matt Cordell is dead now or not.
Undead.
Because he's alive, but a brain dead idiot in the first movie, and now he's kind of like I think they just this said. Well, I guess he's dead, and he's
totally dead.
He's
dude.
An undead vengeance demon now, still raining terror. But this is taking place. We get some Friday the 13th shit with it. Taking place, starting with the ending of the first movie again.
Previously on Maniac Cop.
So that saves you some time, because this had a little over double the budget of the first movie, so they got to go a little more bonkers. But so immediately what we do is like, hey, you like those characters from that first movie? You like Laurie?
You like that story?
Yeah, you like Laurie Landon and Bruce Campbell's character? I'm going to kill him.
Real quick,
kill him. And then we're gonna bounce around to I'm not really sure who the lead is supposed to be. Like, yeah, like the poster and previews and everything tells you Robert Davi, but he's barely I feel in this fucking movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get what's her name from The Hidden?
Claudia Christian. I always want to say Christensen. Yeah.
I think she's a very attractive lady, but I'm just not a fan of her. especially after watching like the making of this movie, and watching interviews with Bill Lustig. She's a kind of a shitty person, I think, when it comes
to working. Maybe she is just her character from The Chase. She's Dalton Voss's trophy wife.
Oh yeah, she's got to be, dude. She just seems real uppity.
Which is weird, because I saw Maniac Cop 2 way before I saw The Chase, but when I see that woman, I'm like, that's Dalton Voss's wife.
Yeah, no shit.
Kind of like Ray Wise, like, I just see him, I was like, oh, he's just Dalton Voss.
Yep. I love me some Ray Wise, too, man. God, he's awesome.
But he is. He's a surprisingly funny, funny guy. Should have been in Maniac Cop 2. But
yeah.
This is the continued story of Matt Cordell's rampage through New York City. And this time, he gets a buddy.
Mm-hmm.
And his battle to avenge his attempted murder?
And is this Halloween Ends or is this Maniac Cop 2? I don't
know. He's out to avenge his attempted murder from prison. And in the meantime, Robert Davi is on a side quest to just try to get the mayor to clear his name.
Yeah,
and get him a proper burial, because once he gets a proper burial, he's at peace until...
Yeah, you would think...
He's at peace until you need a last-second stinger for a third movie.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, I mean, it's just the same with, like, I guess every movie's got a hook to it, right? You know, at the end of The Ring, you think it's done, and then, oh, no, you really just let her loose.
Well, yeah, and this is 89 when this was made, so this is slasher decline, but... Every trope is still being at play here. Mm-hmm.
Well, and also, say what you want about it being the decline. I know you and I have definitely talked about this, and I think that the internet is fully in agreement, for the most part, right? That
it's the descent of the roller coaster is 1989.
Yeah, but still, somehow, Maniac Cop 2 manages to be a better movie than Maniac Cop 1. Like, it is just a better movie. It's the one you reach for. Most fans of Maniac Cop would rather watch Maniac Cop 2 than Maniac Cop 1. I would rather watch Maniac Cop 3 than any of them. But, you know, I'm a different type of cat.
I'm more of a 1 than 2 now. Like, early on, when I first saw it, I was definitely a 2 versus 2 then 1. Because 1 feels like a horror movie. Part 2 feels like a, I don't know, a mild action film.
Mm-hmm. It's like they saw Terminator and went, let's... up it a little bit, you know.
Yeah, very, very Terminator 2 kind of vibes, actually, before Terminator 2 even came out. But I do love the opening to this, just the mangled police cars.
Yeah.
That's a really nice, and with the music they play, sets the horror tone from the first one really well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this one, it's still horror, right? But it is, like you said, it's a different flavor of popcorn. But one thing that they really did nail is changing Cordell's look. As much as, you know, like this is the definitive, you know what I mean? Like we talk about Friday 7 being the definitive look, Elm Street 4 being the definitive look. This is the Maniac Cop look. Never in the history of ever have I went, you know what I like? Just when they put like a couple of splotches of mortician's wax on, fucking what's his name's face. And, you know, call that a makeup. Like, this is a makeup.
I like it, but man, I wish they did the part one thing of just putting it in more shadow. So it's more, we never really get to see a really good look at it. Like, that.
They do that with part three. You got to revisit part three, my friend.
They do, but they also give him more dialogue in that, which I don't really want him having dialogue, even in this movie when he's. Which. Kudos to Leo Rossi's character. I don't know how the hell you ever hear Cordell from him uttering that one word in this movie. I would have been like, what?
Can you repeat it?
Was that like a stretch sound, or did you just speak a word? But going back to being in 1989, here's the thing that is so 1989 horror and changes it theoretically to me. From being a slasher scary movie to being, okay, it's one of them. In the first movie, we have that very gnarly score.
Yeah.
Very creepy. Very ominous. In this movie, we have a rap song.
Yeah, we do, baby.
with I'm just going to read some of these lyrics. Probably the most infamous for at least you and I is part of the lyrics to this Maniac Cop 2 rap.
So good.
Set him on fire. I shoot him with an Uzi, but he'll show up in your jacuzzi. You can run him over. You can feed him poison. Push him out a window, and it only annoys him.
Yeah. Could you read that like it's Shakespeare? Because it's fucking poetry, mate.
You better believe me if you think I'm lying. When he show up, people start dying. Start
dying.
He's out for vengeance and can't be stopped. That's why they call him the maniac cop.
Cop. Boom.
Hoorah, listen, rah. Holy shit.
That's a fucking platinum record, okay?
It is, but again, that is totally telling you, like, it's not going to be scary this time. It's going to be
fun.
Which is fine. Which is totally fine.
Well, and that's the deal, too. You know, we talked about it when we talked about the first Maniac Cop. You got Bill Lustig and Larry Cohen, right?
Yep.
And they got their finger on the pulse, and they usually beat people to the punch 9 times out of 10 because they can make a movie so cheap and so fast and just go, right?
Guerrilla style, illegal filming in New York City when they're not supposed to be filming there.
Yeah, and you know, and so it's 89, and you've got guys like the Cannon Films folks capitalizing on a hip-hop culture, doing like Breakin' and Breakin' 2. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hip-hop is, it's a fad at this point, but it's fun and hip with the kids.
Will Smith and Fat Boys.
Yeah. You know, and Houdini and things of that nature. LL
Gangsta
Cool
Rap
J.
is not a thing yet.
Yeah, no, we're getting there. We're like, we're about to turn that dial into NWA land, but this, you know, they were ready, and they were like, what is it that the kids like? You know what I mean? The kids like boobs. The kids like, seemed like that Terminator movie when he killed everybody at the police station.
Oh, good.
Let's kill everyone at the police station. Let's have a rap song.
That's the little bit of like, well, we did it before. Let's do it again. This station is only shit. Not even, because I mean, what is really the time frame between 1 and 2?
Seems like a day, but you never know.
So there was.
They never say how long he stays under even that water. Let's say when he comes up, he's fish food. You know what I mean? He's pretty gnarly.
So
looking.
Let's say even a year difference. Mm-hmm. That's 2 years of this place getting destroyed.
Right.
By
in
him.
A row.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to get some electronic key locks or some shit.
He's murdered like 60 police officers over 2 years. They've had to restaff twice.
Mm-hmm. That's a risky division to get sent to.
NYC, indeed. For different, completely different reasons than you would think.
Yeah, you mean to tell me I got a higher chance of getting shot at my desk than I do out on the streets of New York?
So Bill Lustig.
Yeah.
You hear you had to buy a vacation for the Maniac Cop to do this movie?
Yeah. Yep. Had to send him to
Hawaii.
I was going to say Florida, but that's not right. Yeah. Send him to Hawaii. He's like, hey, man, you're going to be in a fuckload more makeup. It's going to be way more uncomfortable.
I don't like more makeup.
Makeup is a bitch, man. Especially 89 makeup. You know, we're like, we talk about this a lot when we talk about like the new era of horror when they started using more silicone.
Mm.
But like when you're being glued into foam latex that you can't take off.
And hot lights.
Yeah. You cannot take this off. It's a 12, 16 hour day. Like, and not to mention like a 4 hour sitting in a chair, getting it put on you, period. So like,
and then removal, same time frame.
Yeah.
You can't eat all day. Which I guess Robert Zavi was teasing his ass with, like, this cheeseburger is really good.
Yes.
How's your soup through a straw?
If it was chunky soup, he wasn't getting anything.
Yeah, how's your broth? That broth filling you up good? That hitting the spot for you?
Yeah. So he got a vacation out of the deal. Robert Zavi got a really nice hotel room and a massive trailer.
10 feet longer than Claudia's. Ooh, she was pissed.
And Claudia was a big baby. And speaking of babies, she
didn't
was
have
pregnant.
One.
Yeah, she was pregnant and neglected to tell the production. So that caused a big rift. And I know Claudia put out a book or something.
An autobiography kind of thing, yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of it just ripping Bill Lustig.
I think I saw that she cost like production $200,000 for the delays between, because it was she was doing part of the stunt work on the cop car scene, and that's when she had miscarriage shenanigans begin. I don't have a better word for it.
Yeah.
But that's when things started. So she was in for close-up shots, and she was on a platform, handcuffed to the steering wheel. Then they had the stunt double, of course, and probably dummy work.
Doing all the wides, yeah.
Yeah, doing all the wides and crazy shit. But that's where things went south for her physically.
Yeah, and I don't want to be insensitive, but I'm gonna stand on the side of Bill Lustig for that, because if you don't disclose that you have a medical condition, then it's not the director's fault.
Yeah, he can't protect you from what he doesn't know.
Yeah,
but I guess she was only 3 months in, so
maybe she didn't even.
I was like, could it? I mean, we hear shit stories about people giving birth, and they're like, shit, I thought I was just fat.
Yeah, so
3 months. It's like, did she know? I mean, that's the gray area we're hitting in.
Yeah,
of like, did she know, and did she not tell them on purpose, or did she just not know she was 3 months in?
And I also want to just kind of say, like, if you sign up for a Larry Cohen or a Bill Lustig film, there's a certain level of professionalism that will be achieved, but then there's also,
Gorilla,
we already hit the nail on the head.
There.
It's getting shot as fast as it can, when it can, illegally. We're cutting some corners and we're getting this made. So when you sign up for a film like that, you kind of got to go, okay, I'm in for a ride, and if you don't expect it, I guess you probably shouldn't have taken the job. Like, just look at his filmography. I don't know. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on there. So it's area with Claudia Christensen, and she's the other person we get a chunk of the lead that you think Robert Davi's gonna get. It's run and gun style, but the professionalism is still there. Apparently, even when called bluffed on, because the fire sequence at the end is something Leo Rossi apparently didn't want to do, and he made the director do it first, and he's like, shit, I didn't think you'd actually do that. I guess I got to do it now.
Yep. I will say this, as far as action sequences and whatnot.
It kind of books.
And the first one, how it builds to one action sequence, essentially. This movie has multiple high-octane action sequences. It really, really delivers on the goods when it comes to that. First and foremost is that assassination of every single police officer. But then we do get really cool fire stunts. We get some
falling
car
fire
chase
stunts.
Elements. Yeah, we get a lot of really cool stuff going on in this movie.
For an indie movie, yeah. For something that should not be this extravagant. They're like, they're really going all out for what they can do. That's they're banging for the $4 million they got to work with.
Yeah. And that whole ending sequence with the fire stunt and whatnot. I don't think that I had ever seen anything like that. Like cool like falling stunts that come to mind for me always, first and foremost, is
dummy work.
Well, I think of like Predator when he comes off of the waterfall.
Oh, yeah.
And we get
that
really cool wide shot.
Die Hard.
Yeah. Like, those are the extent of like falling from heights stunts that we had seen, at least for me, that really, really stand out in my mind.
Yeah.
And then this one is like let me fall out of like a five-story building
on fire.
Which is fucking crazy.
Through a bus,
too. Yeah, and let's also, it is 1989. This is pre-CGI. This is, there's a lot of safety protocols that were done to make sure it was safe. But
I'm sure there were some that were like, it'd be cool, right?
You're going to be all right.
Yeah, it'd be fine.
Yeah. I used to ride horses and double as John Wayne or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's this is a real deal stunt, a real deal stupid stunt, and it's pulled off awesomely. And it's like, it gets a pop out of me every time. You know, you're like, God damn, that's fucking crazy.
It does. And then we also have some big cameos inside the prison with Leo Rossi. We got, of course, inmate number two himself, Danny Trejo, doing his Danny Trejo-ness.
Sadly, does not get enough to do in this movie because he wasn't quite Danny Trejo yet. Like, he was, but he wasn't.
And Thomas Clarence III, famous the shit man from Tales from the Hood. And I swear to God, I saw the landlord from It's Always Sunny in the background, too. I'm like, that looks like the landlord to Charlie and Frank back there. Like, I wasn't able to confirm. I was like, it looks like him.
Yeah.
It could be him. I can see him being in jail in New York in 1989.
Clarence Williams III, on the other hand.
I like he just breaks. He just has a mental break at some point. He's just like just sinks into a corner and can't handle it.
But he's such a great character actor that even in 1989, they were like, we got to give this motherfucker a bunch of shit to say. You know what I mean? Like, and he always does a good job, good job of just kind of an unhinged performance. It's really, really fucking good.
Unhinged or a guy on the brink of losing the hinge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, he's just one, like, failed vending machine accident away from losing his shit. Like, if he doesn't get his Dr. Pepper for his 75 cents, it's gonna go bad.
Everybody gonna die.
We also get a really cool opener to this movie. Oh,
the Cobra opener.
Yeah, I was gonna say, very Cobra.
Same guy.
It's so Cobra, but, like, nasty. Like, it's a little nastier, you know? Like,
that's
not...
That's the teeth.
Cordell... Yeah, Cordell's not, like, hanging out drinking a beer.
Chewing. Go ahead, I don't work here.
Yeah.
I don't shop here. Blow it up. I don't give a shit.
Cordell! Be hilarious.
I don't shop here.
If we just remake Cobra with the maniac cop. Just fucking,
it'd be, it'd make more sense
through all the lines.
He is the OG zombie crew, zombie squad. That's... Matt Cordell.
Oh. Yeah, I love that.
You got an attitude though. Problem, Cordell. Yeah, that's just a little one. Just a little one.
And he's banging Bridget Nielsen or whatever her name is. Oh, yes. Shit. He would team up with the Night Stalker or whatever that fucking guy's name is in Cobra. They'd become buddies and they'd clank axes together.
The fuck is his name? Now I'm blanking on what his name was.
Brian Wilson or whatever.
Thompson, Brian Thompson.
Brian Thompson, yeah.
Yeah,
Brian,
that's
Wilson.
Him.
Who the fuck's Brian Wilson?
Some asshole. Sorry, all the Brian Wilsons out there listening to this show.
Yeah, all one of you, if there is one. But, yeah, I'm trying to think of other really crazy sequences in this movie. One comes to mind is when Leo Rossi is attacking one of the dancers, one of his girls.
His next girl.
And Matt Cordell comes busting in. That's when, like, the...
Why does he come busting in? That's the weird thing.
I don't
thing.
Know. It's very weird, and I was going to say, that's where this weird, like, unlikely team-up begins.
I mean, yeah, he's good at framing guys, but not like, yeah, I'll hang out with you.
Yeah.
That seems, that's the weird aspect of this movie, which as a kid, I'm like, neat. But now I'm like, strange.
Yeah, because we start to kind of drift, because the whole purpose of Matt Cordell is to kill the people who wronged him. Right, and so by the time we get midpoint of part two, he's killing people that wronged him, but then he's like also he's like killing cops and criminals. It's like he doesn't have a clear
he's lost
yeah he doesn't have a clear motive, which again kind of it gets muddy because, you know, we talk a lot about, like, the things that are needed to make a definitive slasher or a successful slasher. Cool look, cool theme, cool weapon. You know, means of dispatching. Like, they have to have their own mythos. But they got to have a clear motive, you know? Freddy's killing the kids of the parents that killed him. Jason's killing the people who come to the lake that he believes are responsible for his death and his mother's death. You know, like, it all has to kind of fit a puzzle piece so it doesn't get super muddy. And this movie is where I feel like it starts to pull away a little bit from that.
Because he gets his revenge, really. He kills all the guys who get him wronged.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's he going to do now?
Go to the cemetery and go to bed. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
You got to go to prom. You got to have your dance. Now you got to go lay down and die. Or whatever. So, it doesn't...
Yeah, so what is he going to do? He kills everyone that were trying to kill him and frame him.
Mm-hmm.
Now what?
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But at some point, we just stop caring that it doesn't make sense, and we just go for the ride. And that's where a little bit of that Larry Cohen, I feel like, shines through. It's like,
who cares? Just keep going.
People are here to watch it, so who cares? You know, we'll make it up. And
there's a flying dragon on the roof of the Sears building. Just fucking go with it.
Just deal with it, you know? And it works for the most part, but the repeat viewings and the cynical old men that we are, that's when you go, I don't know that makes a lot of sense. And then we start picking it apart. Doesn't mean we don't love it, but gonna pick it apart a little bit. So, just happens.
So how were you when you first saw Bruce Campbell get killed off in this movie? Were you a fan then? Did you recognize him?
Yeah, oh yeah, I recognized him.
But, I didn't.
You know, I always kind of like forget that he's the lead in the first movie because I don't watch the first movie all that much. So when it comes to the second one, and I'm like, man, whatever, you know, take him out, I guess. Lorraine Landon gets to have a little bit more
chainsaw shit going on with her. That's fantastic. She's my brown panty achievement winner for that.
Oh yeah.
I hate that she has to go, which I guess she was supposed to be in a coma.
Yeah, she was supposed to be the lead lady in the third movie.
Would have been a better movie then.
But she didn't sign on for it, or she wanted too much money, so they wrote a couple extra pages and had Maniac Kate McKinnon, or whatever her name is, get shot and put in a coma. And, I mean, you know, maybe you'll come around to three, man, because I really do like three a lot, but you never know.
You never do.
Yep.
We also get James Earl Jones' dad in this movie for a hot sequence, too.
That's true. And he does a really good job.
His story is really nice. Like, listening to him tell his...
account of what happened, yeah.
Mm-hmm. His war story.
Yeah, the cold hands or whatever.
Yes.
That's real good. And it's also accompanied by the maniac cop, kind of like that kind of whistle tone score, so it really kind of makes you feel, oh Jesus, you know,
you're there. He can tell it, like, you feel like you're there.
Yeah,
just covering up with the bodies,
get kind of thrust into this, like, we get to know that Cordell is a corpse just from that, you know. And it's like, once you find out that he's undead, it starts to be like, well, then how do you stop him? You know?
Yeah, what do you do?
Kind of makes him more powerful.
How do you kill someone that's already dead?
That's like some refried beans and shit.
That's a good question, Bert. Not a bad question. How does a blind man run a TV or a newsstand anyway?
I don't know.
I'm sure they do, but I'm just like, how do you have them organized right and... Just all the logistical things. I'm just like,
I don't know that works. I mean, you can't. I mean,
kids today won't even know because they're like, what are they buying there? Like, well, Google News used to be in print.
Yeah, print is dead.
Yeah, that's where we used to get all of our information from.
Yeah, from paper.
And I can't remember if is it during part one or part two that Bruce Campbell was going through divorce. So it's like.
That's part one.
part one, so it's taboo to take Maniac Cop to get signed by him, but I guess you can take part two where he gets stabbed almost immediately in the movie. Which, first time showing the wife, she was like, I don't like this movie now. Like, I don't know when she became all of a sudden the biggest Bruce Campbell advocate, but as soon as he gets gutted with that Billy Club knife thing, she's just like, no, I'm out. And I'm like, I'm not out, and I have Bruce tattooed on my back. How the hell are you out?
Yeah, it's fine because we get, you know, I actually really like Robert Davi as a lead, and he carries on into the third movie. So
he does, and man, I saw the poster for this. I actually think I had the poster for this. I can't remember how I came across it, but I had a poster of Maniac Cop 2 in my room.
Nice.
Long before I got to see it. So I had made up my own, like, story in my head of what the battle is, because it's like, good cop versus bad cop, Robert Davi versus the Maniac Cop. And we don't really get that at all.
Not really, at all.
Because after Bruce Campbell bites it, like we talked about earlier, it's like it kind of bounces around on who the hell is supposed to be the lead, because Robert Davi was told he was going to be the lead, which is one of the things that got him to sign on, and he is for the brief moments he's in the movie, but it's more Claudia's all of a sudden, like, now it's her movie, and even watching it for the first time, I'm like, I guess we're following her now?
I will
she starts out as such a stick in the mud.
Yeah.
On the whole believing Cordell thing. And in the course of, like, being handcuffed to that cop car, she's like, nope, I believe it now.
Yeah. I will say this, though, about the third one, we actually do get a really good showdown between Robert Davi and Matt Cordell. But going back to Claudia and her kind of assertively stepping in and taking this lead role, I think that's all accidental, right? Like, Bill Lustig and Larry Cohen, the way they had her written wasn't so assertive and abrasive. And
oh, yeah, that was
Claudia.
Her, like,
yeah, she was like,
she was going to do it that way.
Yeah, I'm playing it this way. And they'd be like, no, like, you need to play it this way. Well, I'm going to play it like I would play it because I'm playing it. Like, she was very, like, matter of fact, like, I'm assertive. This is who I am.
I am this character. I am the table.
Yeah. And so I feel like if she was a little bit more meek, you know what I mean? Like, if she was really the, you know, intended, like, we might become a love interest, but even though Robert Davi and her hated one another during filming, but, like, if it had been played the way it was supposed to be played, I think she would have taken more of a backseat, even though she has equal amount of scenes as Robert Davi, you know.
Robert Davi is a character I never see having a love interest. Like, I don't know what it is. Clint Eastwood, I can see it. Arnold, I can see it. Keanu Reeves, easily I can see it.
Yeah.
Robert Davi is like one of the few actors, maybe the only one I'm thinking of, is like, he never is in love. Even in, he has a cameo like spot in the movie The Hot Chick with Rob Schneider where he plays a married man with a teenage daughter. Even in that movie, he's just like so seemingly off-put by being married to a woman.
But I think it's just because he's like tough looking. You know what I mean? Like, he's very abrasive.
He doesn't seem like he gives a fuck about your feelings at all.
It's in the like, eyes too.
Yeah, he plays it so much in that movie because like his wife is like, I think something's going on with this. I think that guy may have swapped bodies with a teenage girl. And he's like making a model boat, and he looks up and he goes, if you mess around with our daughter, I will have you committed. Like, so shit, I can see his character. Like, in my mind, it probably could be his character from this franchise, just retired and got married in the suburbs and fucking hates it.
Hates everything.
Hates life. He's just painting model boats, wishing of the days he could murder people again.
Yeah, no, Robert Davi definitely has that, like, he's like the Brillo pad of actors. You know what I mean? Like,
perfect.
He's just like, he's too tough for his own good. Like, he's gonna remove some skin.
So unlike him, back to Leo Rossi, I do like the side story when he's getting into character for this movie. Apparently, they filmed that in an actual strip club, I guess, that's by the airport. But in order to get in the character headspace, I don't know who does this today, and it's cool. Like, I think Jared Leto probably tries doing this shit when he was the Joker, but it comes off the complete other way. But he's like, I'm going to try this shit out. So he goes to a legit strip club, and his trick to unnerve you is just to look in your eyes the whole time. Like, and he's even saying it like, yeah, a strip club, you're looking at boobs, you're looking at butts, you're looking at, you know, that stuff. He's just dead staring strippers in their eyes.
Wow.
Unnerving them to the point where he got thrown out of a strip club legitimately because he was creeping out the girls. Which you gotta go pretty fucking far to freak out the airport strip club strippers.
They have seen some shit come and go.
He literally probably both coming and going. And they're like, God, get him out of here.
Well, he plays crazy very convincingly, you know?
He does so much, I did not recognize him. Like I said, I did not put together that's the same dude from Halloween 2 at all.
It's weird because, like, it's a different type of crazy. You know, we've seen people play crazy in everything, you know, the hitchhiker in Texas Chainsaw, whatever. Like, there's, like, an aggression. There's, like, a, you know, some people do this weird, quirky, twitchy thing or weird laughs or whatever, but like Leo Rossi, it's in the eyes, like you said, him just looking at you. He doesn't look like he could kick a door down, but he looks like would pick the lock while you're asleep and fucking strangle you. Like, it's a different type of scary.
I can see him standing outside your window for 13 hours and then just smashing it with a brick all of a sudden.
Yep.
And it's a weird balance that he plays, because in those moments where he's just staring at the stripper, it's like, yeah, you can see some pain, some shit that's off its rocker in his head mentally there. And then when you see him in action, like when he's going after the girl, it seems like he's like trying to put on the facade of a serial killer. Like, he's trying too hard.
Mm-hmm.
To fit, like, the criteria that he read or saw, like, okay, this is what serial killers do. I've got to make a shrine. Got to have candles burning round the clock, even when I'm not there. Make sure they're always burning. and I just want a friend.
Yep. But that's a weird thing that I have picked up on in my adult years of watching movies. It's like, they always go into these rooms, and there's always, like, 4,000 candles burning. I'm like, who takes the time? Who's lighting all these goddamn candles? Like, that's a fire hazard and a half.
Well, it's also impractical. Of like, I don't even think I've owned as many candles as you see in any one scene in this movie.
Yeah, flip the switch on.
and who has the thought of, like, after you get done lighting 76 candles in your tiny clock tower apartment, you're like, all right, it's time to go now. I'll come back to this shit later.
Yeah, super not safe.
Yeah, how is the whole room not looking like the House of Wax by the time you return? Like, it should just be coated.
Yeah. Either that
thick.
Or on fire. Like,
yeah, well,
comes home, the apartment's on fire.
You know, he's not paying rent, so he doesn't give a shit if that place actually burns down. He'll set up shop at another clock tower across the way.
True.
But yeah, the budding relationship with him and Cordell is strange, and I've wondered, curious what you think, when they're hanging out, him and Cordell, and he's asking him about his past.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he's telling him that whole story? We get the whole flashback again from the first movie.
Again.
I didn't mind it. Kind of don't, because it's shot pretty neat. And
it's
cool.
Awesome, but they definitely, like, they get their mileage.
Oh, yeah. Do you think he's telling them? He's telling him that story? Or is he, like, subliminally, like, putting that shit in his head, like,
I think he
mentally
told him,
projecting
him. Took like 3 days.
4 days.
Yeah, of storytelling. And that's the other thing, too, about the finale of this movie. Like, again, the fire stunt, fucking cool, right? But this whole, like, plan to go to the prison and take out these inmates and these guards that, you know, the guards that let it happen and the inmates that were responsible for it.
Yeah, the one cop that we had survived from the first movie that was telling Tom Atkins about the Cordell Paston love interest gets his head shot almost clean off in the shooting range, which starts, yeah, that complete annihilation of police station raid.
It's so good.
Which we're not told directly. It's just assumption that it's like, all right, we cleared this place out and broke out Leo Rossi and these group of knuckleheads. We're going to commandeer a bus to go to the big prison and exact revenge. It feels like that's totally shit that Leo Rossi's character just making up. And he's like, yeah, that is a good idea. We should go do that.
Well, and then we also get to the point where Leo Rossi realizes, like, oh, I'm not your friend. You just want to kill these people. Like, again, it's this weird, like, muddy motive of, because Matt Cordell has killed numerous people off the beaten path in this film. So then for him to get back on the path, who's to say that after he exacts his revenge that needs to be exacted, that he wouldn't continue to kill criminals and cops alike? You know what I mean? Like
the corrupt.
Yeah, let him just
killing keep, of the corrupt.
Let him just keep moving forward and taking people out. But somehow, some way, we reach this conclusion. Like, oh, you don't want nothing to do with me. We're not gonna keep killing after this. Like, why? Why do you think that? Like, I'm here killing. I'm killing everything. Like,
I kill. That's what I do.
Yeah.
And if you didn't get enough flashbacks with the opener and retelling of the tale, we're gonna get micro flashbacks before he kills everyone that wronged him, because they're still all in this prison, all hanging out in close proximity. We'll get micro flashbacks to, oh, that's that guy who was standing in that position who tried to stab me in the shower. Yep. Now here he is in real life. I'm going to kill him for real. On to the next guy. Give me two flashbacks of him before I kill him.
Kill him a lot.
Next guy. Yeah, so they, when we're saying they get their mileage out of that first movie, they really get their mileage out of it.
Oh, yeah, they stretch it for three movies, man. Also, I wanted to touch on this while I'm thinking of it. I know in the last podcast I had told you there is a Maniac Cop remake looming on the horizon, and I had mentioned
allegedly
John Bernthal. I had mentioned John Bernthal as the lead. Now that's not the case. It is, from what I've read in a few articles and we've shared on our Discord, Elijah Wood is going to play the Maniac Cop. So, I don't know. I'm okay with it because I liked Elijah Wood in the Maniac remake, which also, you know, is a Lustig film. So, we'll see.
But he's such a little guy. Bernthal just has a face that it's ready to be carved up and
covered in makeup and, yeah.
Yeah, like he's, it feels like he's halfway there already.
True.
Like it doesn't, yeah, I don't know. But that's the thing that keeps popping up every, like, so many months. It's like that it's getting a remade. It's getting a new title, a new lead.
It's just called Cop. Cop. Now. It's not called Maniac Cop, which is it the same thing? No, it's completely different. If it's just called Cop. But
I mean, we just, as of this recording, had a movie come out recently that was just called Plane. So, about an airplane.
I don't know.
Yeah, and like an action movie that is taking place. It's Die Hard on a plane, but they just call it Plane, which was its own fun side argument with the wife, because she's like, that's a stupid title. I'm like, is it? Like, we really love the movie Airplane, and that's just putting three more letters in front of that.
What if it's Plane with an I? Like, this is just a plain-ass movie.
That was the original title, maybe for Clerks.
Yeah.
Just a plain old day with a little bit of wildness in there thrown in. But yeah, every so often we'll get some new Maniac Cop alleged news, and I was like, I'll believe it when I see
something
when I see a trailer with a legitimate, like, production company behind it.
Right.
Not like Fred's Films, here's the Maniac Cop 4 remake trailer, first showing, here it is.
Yeah. We need some legit news.
Yeah, when IGN or MovieClips.com, some shit like that, is putting it out, then I'll be like, I think they're going to remake Maniac Cop.
So I'm all for it, though. I'm ready. We haven't had a Maniac Cop film since, what, like 93 is when, 93, 94. I can't remember when Maniac Cop 3 came out, but
a long time. Well, it's old is new again, so yep. It's due. It's probably not going to be too far off from happening.
Yeah, we should just need Maniac Cop 4. Like, I mean, I know that, why am I blanking on his name?
It'll be some bullshit like Maniac Cop Resurrection.
I'd be okay with it.
It'll be one of those bullshit like, because they won't give us a number. No one wants a number anymore. They want like
Maniac Cop Returns. Yeah.
Maniac Cop semicolon back on the force.
Yeah, some shit like that. But I'm all for it. I don't know. Like, I'm cool with a remake too, but like, just continue it. You know, the people who want to see a new Maniac Cop movie. Are the Maniac, like, we're the OG Maniac Cop fans. I don't know that you need to bring in a new audience. So I don't know it's going to explode and be a blockbuster. You know what I mean? I think it's going to move the same amount of units as it did back in the day type of thing. So
it'll be, I can see it being like an exclusive to Shudder. Like,
yeah.
Because they're getting pretty good about making sequels to flicks. Like, I know we got another VHS, like 85 is on the horizon this year.
Shudder is shutting down.
Really? Is it shutting down?
Yeah. They're getting rid of Shudder.
How are you telling me this? No.
I thought I have discussed this with you. Yeah.
No, I know there's been word of like a bunch of layoffs for folks, but I'd not heard like an official like.
It's going to be terminated. Yeah, it's getting terminated, which...
How are you telling me this?
I could have sworn I've talked to you about this.
I have to deal with this live on the air.
Yeah, they're getting rid of it, which... Sidebar. If you've ever listened to us talk about Holliston, we're massive Holliston fans, and we were kind of like, Holliston got a home on Shudder, and we're kind of like... Maybe we're gonna get our season 3 finally. So there's been a lot of reasons why season 3 had not happened. Whether that be Dave Brocky passing away, whether that be Adam going through his divorce, Corey English having a child, and then another year goes by and she has another child. No shit, like fucking a month ago, she announced she's having another baby. And I could not help but think if like I'm Adam Green going, congratulations, fuck me. You know what I mean? Like Laura Ortiz having kids, like every single time he's like, you know what, we got a home for our show, I got it written out, like maybe we can get this going. Someone's like, I'm having a baby. Well, that's fucking 8 months I can't shoot you. Like, you fucking assholes, stop.
So what you're saying essentially is Adam Green is the poison for streaming services.
Maybe. I don't know,
it's
but
Adam's fault Shudder's going under.
I'll see if I can find you the article and I'll send it to you. But yeah, it has something to do with it. It's getting dissolved.
Hopefully just into a different, maybe Screambox will just acquire it and take over something. That's barely a streaming service, but...
I feel like it's just horror. It's like having its own streaming service seems like a no-brainer. And I'd imagine like subscriptions and stuff go up around October for the casual fans. But a lot of the content that like Shudder offers is they're either exclusives or they're indie films. You know, a lot of new things that real horror fans want to check out because... A real horror fan doesn't just want to watch the same shit over and over again. We want to discover new things. But, you know, I feel like the casual horror fan is like, ooh, Elm Street 2. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to click on, you know, they're going to watch the same shit they watch all the time. And why need a streaming service if you already own those movies? You know what I mean? So, I fucking don't know. And I'm sad about it. But,
Oh, wait. Well, speaking of disappointment and sadness, let's look at the folks who share that sentiment about Maniac Cop 2 with the Amazon one-star reviews.
Hated it.
All right, believe it or not, there's not a whole shit ton of one-star reviews for Maniac Cop 2. Is that because it's not a very well-known movie or because it's so popular not many people will give it a one-star? You decide.
I think it's because it's awesome.
Well, here's at least four people who disagree with you.
All right.
Starting with Strawbring, Or Straubing.
Bing.
Straubing.
What are you doing here?
Straubing.
But I January told you to 20th. Fuck your mother.
January 20th, 2020. One star. Too much boring dialogue. Not enough monster.
I disagree. There's plenty of monster in this one.
Not enough for a Straubing.
Bing.
Next we have Ojeda. Hey, Ojeda.
Got my eye on you, Ojeda.
Both of them. January 19th, 2010. One star. Horrible. What else can I say?
That's it?
And no. And I was going to say, and he goes on to say.
Oh.
What else can I say? Well, maybe I can't think of something.
Takes deep breath.
Yeah. Why is Bruce Campbell... is the cover when he doesn't even last 20 minutes in the movie?
Is he on the cover? I don't think so.
I don't think he's on the cover. Maybe he thinks Robert Davi is Bruce Campbell, just older. That's how he looks after the first Maniac Cop. But like, he's like, why is Bruce Campbell is the cover when he doesn't even last 20 minutes in the movie? Very bad sequel, not to knock on the first. The first was bad as... is, but this one is was even worse. Yeah, a lot. This is all
bad
together.
As is, but bad as was.
No, bad as is, and bad as was.
I'm gonna get now. Bad as is tattooed on this forearm, and bad as
bad
was.
As was. Why is cover? Why is Bruce is cover?
Why is cover?
Why is cover? Now. I know why this is very hard to find. Very hard to find a piece of crap these days.
I disagree
really,
with that part. Yeah.
I was like, it's really not. I think Amityville is currently making at least 300 to 400 a year. Right,
Amityville
now.
Is literally shitting itself every 5 minutes.
Which, mini sidebar to that, one of the movies I've always liked the cover for, Amityville Curse, has a Blu-ray release all of a sudden now. I saw it the other day. Different cover art on the Blu-ray.
Of course.
And I'm like, well, shit. I don't have $24 to buy this, but if I did, I'd be disappointed I couldn't buy it for this artwork, but it's not on there. Maybe it's reversible. I don't know. I don't know who the hell put it out. All right, next. Rondell Del Branch, as always, makes his return March 17th, 2002.
That's 21 years ago.
One star, deadly, dull, and silly stuff. Zombie Cop is on the loose again. Yes, this sequel's, in quotes, bigger. But man, it's boring and silly. Some action, but hardly enough.
False. Falsity, false, false, false.
That should have been the tagline for Maniac Cop 2. Zombie Cop is on the loose again.
Yes.
And round out the one stars from Russell on May 7th, 2004. One star. What? A pathetic film.
What?
W-A-T. What? A pathetic film. And then he goes on to tell us, in all caps, of course... do not buy this film. It has no storyline, no plot, no meaning. I can't believe I wasted my money on this. I'm a hardcore horror fan. This film disappointed me big time. If anyone is interested in slasher flicks, then buy Maniac.
I disagree.
Four people were like, thank you, Russell. Yeah. That was helpful.
As much as I love me some Bill Lustig and stuff, I love Maniac, but I don't watch that very often. It's not like an often.
It's not fun.
No, it's not a fun movie.
It's a really dark, kind of depressing film. Like no one is coming out of Maniac screenings laughing, holding their belly going, that was great.
Yeah, well, actually, like, I hate to say it, but I think I watched the Maniac remake more than I watched the original Maniac.
I've seen Maniac a total of, I think, twice, and I've never seen the remakes, though.
Solid. The remake is solid. Definitely worth watching, but yeah, there's a cloud that hangs over the original Maniac. Like, I feel like every horror fan had to see it when we were growing up, like, oh man, Tom Savini, head explosions, scalping people, yada yada. Like, those were the selling points. And then, like, the actual movie is fairly depressing. So you're like, son of a bitch.
We got another 87 minutes to go here, so strap in.
Yeah.
And get your tissues ready.
Yeah, and then it does that whole weird thing where, like, he falls in love with fucking Carolyn Monroe, and he pretends he's a photographer, and then all of a sudden, at the very end of the movie, decides he's going to kill her. Like, you got everything you want. You got, like, a good girlfriend. Like, you know, you put the killing behind you. Whatever. It's that, just, it's weird. It's a weird-paced film.
That ending is fucking weird as shit, too. I was just like, what the hell is happening? What's going on here?
It's an acid.
I don't know what's happening.
We fear change.
Yes, which, to tie it into Maniac Cop 2, I guess that was the dedication, like at the during the credits at some point. I can't remember if it's the beginning or end. That's dedicated to original actor of Maniac. Yeah, Spinell, because he died same year this movie came out. And that's kind of the bridge. They just like, will we make Maniac? Will we make Maniac Cop?
We add one more word. Yeah.
Yeah. We had three letters. Add air to plane, different movie, much better.
Yeah.
add three letters to the end of it, better movie, and we get a trilogy. Ain't no Maniac trilogy, but there's sure as shit a Maniac Cop trilogy.
Goddamn right.
With talk of a reboot, fourth, whatever the fuck, new one.
Mm-hmm. Give it.
Called Cop. Well, let's add an exclamation point, so it seems legit.
Like, Cop! Cop!
Are you a cop?
No, I'm filmed in front of a live studio audience or whatever the fuck it is. Men and women of law enforcement.
If that happens and becomes a theatrical release, heaven help the ticket taker at the theater, because I'll go back to the theater and be like, what are you here for? Give me two tickets for Cop.
I'm disappointed that Nick Nolte's not in Cop, but
I'm here to see Cop.
What if he's the grizzled cop that has to take down Elijah Wood?
Oh my god, just you give him a haircut and then he's put him in the suit and he's ready to go. He doesn't need makeup.
Mickey Rourke as Cop.
Like, Jesus Christ, you look like we already sit, you know, like, makeup did a hell of a job. Like, I just got here. What are you talking about? Fire the makeup department. We don't need him. We're going to save some money in the budget. We're just going to hire Nick Nolte instead.
They just stapled fucking chicken skin to a skeleton. That's what fucking Mickey Rourke looks like now. It's rough, dude. It's bad. I feel so bad because I love that dude, man. Age gracefully.
The wife is like, man, that movie 9.5 weeks was pretty hot. It's not the same now. If he were to make 10.5 weeks as Mickey Rourke today, it would be the most controversial film ever made.
He's rough, dude. Like, I mean, I understand there's like this stigma in Hollywood where like you got to try and stay young forever, but like, just fucking age gracefully. Just do it. Like, stop stapling your skin tighter and tighter.
Don't put shit in your face. Don't inject stuff. Yeah, don't modify it. And don't decide when you're in your midlife crisis to join a boxing club and get your face smashed in. Yeah, just, I mean, it works for the Expendables. He looks like, yeah, it looks like a guy that would run this kind of organization, but... Mm-hmm. That's about it. I think I'm in the minority. I like him in Iron Man 2. I'm like, yeah, that looks like a Russian dude.
Yeah. I just like Iron Man 3, which is blasphemy to Marvel fans, but is what it is.
That's because we're casuals and we're not hardcore, so.
Like, that's true.
I don't mind any of the Iron Man movies. I love Iron Man 2. Fuck y'all.
Yeah, fuck it.
Like what you like. I don't care. We're like, we like Iron Man's. We like Maniac Cops. We like fucked up faces.
It's true. Was that the end of the Amazon one-star reviews, Evil?
That is all I could find for Maniac Cop 2.
All you could muster.
So, no, that's about literally like I went through all the one stars. So nice. Those are that's the cream of the crop right there.
Rising to the top.
So like I said, you decide. Excessively popular film or slept on movie no one has reviewed on Amazon yet.
A little bit of both, I'm thinking, but.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, now that we're done with the Amazon one-star reviews, Evil, what does that mean?
It's time to wake up, let me give him a bottle of whiskey, and get ready to play the game.
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game!
It's all about the game and how you play it. You know, I feel like I'm a crusader against the horrors of the world.
Cordell! I'm just going to keep doing it. It's been an hour of me just fucking randomly.
Cordell!
Doesn't he, that like, would sing a song about, like, Cordell? Like, my friend Cordell.
I will see you in hell.
There it is. Yeah.
My friend Cordell.
God damn it.
Makes probably as much sense if you had Matt Cordell singing Motorhead's the game theme as Lemmy himself is.
It's all about the game.
If for some reason you've slept on why we make, or at least I make fun of Lemmy's singing of that song, is if you've ever watched him try to perform it live, I don't think he's ever reread the lyrics that he wrote for it, because he's making that shit up on the fly.
Making them up. But that's right, it is time to play the game, and if you're new here, welcome. But you're probably scratching your head asking yourself, what is the game? Well, the game is a deep cut in and of itself where you gotta pick a prop from the movie that we are covering, but it can't be a well-known prop. So since we're covering Maniac Cop 2, you can't say you want Cordell's jacket, you can't say you want Cordell's badge, and you damn sure can't say you want Cordell's nightstick knife thing. Those are all low-hanging fruit, and as Evil loves to say, you gotta go deep, or
get strangled in your stripper apartment.
With some lingerie. I think that's how they pronounce it, lingerie. But yeah, so let us know the prop you pick, whether it's on Patreon, whether it's on comments on the podcast, on whatever podcast app you listen to, Discord, YouTube, Facebook, all of those apparatuses. You can get a hold of us,
Spotify.
And let us know. Spotify.
There's but either a million goddamn podcast apps.
Lots of them out there. Let us know the prop you pick. And the weirder and the more offbeat, the better. So
more bonus points you get.
This is a game that Evil and I conjured up many, many moons ago when we would sit at conventions and we would have tons of time to babble because no one was talking to us. So we would you know, daydream up weird props we would take from movies.
It's something I took from, I can't remember the conversation. It was on one of the Kevin Smith pods of, like, if he could take home anything from the Jaws film set, he would have liked to take the barrels.
One of the barrels,
big
yeah.
Yellow barrels, yeah. I was like, ooh, that'd be this is a fun way to just kill some time. You're just hanging around like, all right, prop game, and just give somebody a movie title and see what they would want to take. Like, mm-hmm. You get to take some home, like, add it to your collection of cool things. Like, what do you got there? Oh, this is the screen used, not the DeLorean, but the paper that has Jennifer's phone number on the back of it from Back to the Future. How cool is that?
Yeah, super rad. And a deep cut, which is kind of, you know, how we live our lives. We throw a lot of deep cut movie quotes out that normal people around us have no idea what we're fucking talking about. We also love to pick weird props from movies that no one would ever think is cool except us.
It's the bragging rights. If you can find a weirder thing to pick that make the other person go, oh damn, that's good.
Absolutely. So let us know yours, like I said, in any of the ways humanly possible. But Evil, I think I will let you go first this week. Because I am not super well-versed in this movie, so I had to do some thinking.
Oh, I thought you were just...
You're talking.
Always trying to remember who the hell went first on the last time, and we never remember.
I can never remember that. Is it the red or the white clam chowder?
White? Yes.
I can never remember that.
Well, when it comes to Maniac Cop 2... instantly, I think of I think of two things. One is, like I said in the first movie, how I got Maniac Cop 1 and 2 on VHS tapes, mm-hmm. solo VHS tapes, dubbed, had no idea what they're about, and totally got spooked to shit for Maniac Cop, and then had a blast watching Maniac Cop 2. But also had the Maniac Cop 2 poster long mm-hmm. before I saw the movie, and after. I really wish I knew how the hell I came across having a Maniac Cop 2 poster and what the hell happened to it post. But I did have one, and I would always, like I said, I'd look at it and imagine the fight that was going on between Robert Davi and Matt Cordell. So, in the spirit of that, because this has a slight noirness to it
definitely.
Give me Robert Davi's hat.
Nice. That's
his
perfect.
His snap brim hat.
That is one thing we did not really touch on with this film is, like you said, the noir look to this movie. The lighting is fantastic. The use of shadows. Everything is just, it's got this weird, like, 40s, 50s, meh, see? Like,
a bit, yeah. When you have Robert Davi's fully doing that, wearing a suit with like a jacket and then that hat with it, like some Untouchables kind of look to him.
Yeah,
and really it fits. Cool. He doesn't look weird or silly. He's one of those guys that pulls off that look really well. So.
Yeah, so we get that noir thing, but then we also get like rooms that are red for no reason, rooms that are green for no reason. A lot of that stuff, which you and I absolutely love, just color. Just give me some color. Let's break it up. Let's not have it be so fucking boring and normal looking. So heavy use of shadows and fun use of color is always going to stand
fog
out to us.
Fog, too. Yeah. Like in the convenience store, we have that thing of, just like in Cobra, we
it's
have
coming
fog.
Out of the ice, or coming out of the soda machines.
Yeah, like there's dry ice just laying in this cooler. You know, unless it's really extreme temperatures outside, like
it's
doesn't
summer.
Happen.
Heat wave, yeah.
I've worked in frozen food stuff, and very rarely will I get some of that fog mist coming off the bottom corner of a door open up.
The horror movie fog, yeah.
Yeah, and it sure as shit doesn't fill the room.
No, but it's awesome.
It looks great, but I've never been like, this looks like the set of Silver Bullet all of a sudden.
Yeah, get the Peacemaker out.
Yeah.
Well, as far as my prop goes, we were talking a little bit off air, and there's a few things that stick out. You know, part of me really, like, I want to take something from the police massacre. And we were kind of joking about the, there's these giant wooden beams that, like, separate the offices, the police offices, when he throws that cop through. And they're clearly, they're either balsa wood or fucking just styrofoam, like they're
it's a like a million offices all in this one giant room with no roofs on it, so you get an aerial kind of shot looking down on all these offices and phones going off. And then dude just rolls in, shoots everyone until he gets to the end of the row, because he just walks through all the glass doors.
It's awesome.
Until he gets to the end and then just grabs the like chief there and hurls him through every beam.
Yeah, like fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger throws that guy in Last Action Hero when he's doing the Hamlet flashback.
It's to me the same equivalent of in Freddy vs. Jason when he throws the glow stick guy country mile in the air.
Yeah.
Like it's excessive power.
As the kids say, yeets him. Yeah, no, it's awesome. So part of me really
wants the fuck is yeetsome?
Yeet? When you yeet something, you throw it?
What is yeet?
I don't know. Y-E-E-T? The kids say it. My kids say it. I don't know. I'm trying to keep up with the times.
I'm still just trying to get them to stop saying bruh.
Oh, they'll never stop saying bruh.
To each other. Like, you're two girls. I'm the only bruh you could almost have in the house.
And I'm your dad, and if you call me bruh, I'm going to break your nose.
Don't stop saying it. I'm officially in that place. I'm like, you sound like an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I was doing some equivalent.
Dude.
At the same age.
I throw out
dude.
Yeah,
I think it was dude.
I say bro.
I distinctly remember my mom at one point like, stop calling me dude. Just because it'd be like, yeah, it's just like it's a surprise like sound like instead of it's dude.
Yeah. I'll never stop saying dude, and I never lived in California.
So I guess it's that coming back to haunt me. Today it's bruh. But
yeah.
Honestly, I feel it's already so played out because that was shit that was going on in Too Fast, Too Furious.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 2001.
Yeah, that's old slang. You better step up your slang game. But So part of me wants one of those broken beams, right? Really bad. And then you and I were discussing also the opener, because the opener is pretty metal. The opener is a really good indication of what type of movie you're getting into. and we were talking about things, and you brought up the lottery ticket, and that really struck a chord with me, because I was like, imagine it really was a winning lottery ticket. We could actually make Maniac Cup 4 the way we want it. So
that opener is awesome, but it's goofy as shit in a whole another realm of, like, the dude playing the mugger has, you know his face. He just has the face of mugger guy, and he looks like he ate a sleeve of Oreos before he started, before they hit rolling on the camera.
Yeah.
His fucking teeth. And when he can't rob the convenience store, he's like, well, let's just start going through all the scratcher tickets, because clearly one of those is going to be... This is desperation, pure desperation.
Just steal the roll and then go home.
Yeah,
and
just
do
take
it.
The whole goddamn. Yeah, you got your evening plan. Then you're not a race against the clock there trying to get the winning ticket before the police show up.
He's a robber, and he's still the equivalent of the fucking crackhead I have to deal with every time I go to the gas station to buy like a candy bar and a soda. Someone's in front of me, like, they buy a scratcher, they win a dollar. Well, let me get another, and then they stand there and scratch it. Let me get another. Can I get a Powerball? Can I get a?
I feel like a winner.
Yeah, they just fucking stand there and keep scratching. Like, bitch, get out of my way. I want to go home.
Raj is losing his patience, and before long, he's reenacting the end of that sequence. He's just stepping over a bloody winning lottery ticket
on
the convenience store floor.
There is nothing more infuriating than, like just, okay, yeah, just say you mildly have to take a shit. But you are fucking
the
stopping
countdown
at the gas
has begun,
station.
But you're at a 10.
Yeah, you got to poop. It's coming. But you run into the gas station real quick to grab a soda, and then you're on your way home. And some fucking moron is in front of you for 10 minutes buying lottery ticket. Scratch it. Buy another lottery ticket. Then they're like, oh, I need some cigarettes. And then the cashier doesn't know what type of cigarettes. Oh, no, not the Marlboro Reds with the flat box or the soft box or whatever. And they're fucking standing
Lucky
there like
strikes.
Stand there like fucking morons.
Tell me the ingredients on the Lucky Strike pack versus the Marlboro pack. I'm trying to make a healthier choice this year.
Yeah, and nothing annoys me more than that situation. Like, it's a convenience store for a reason. Like, it's supposed to be fast. I'm trying to get in here.
Store, more like an inconvenience store.
Ha, stupid title, by the way. But yeah, like, fucking, like, I just want to, I'm in here to grab my fucking soda and go home. I don't want to be your friend. I don't want to fucking stand behind you.
I don't want to be your friend.
I hate that. Get the fuck out of my way. So
that's
sorry about...
That's what's pushing Leo Rossi's character into going into the Maniac Cop's arms, because Raj won't be his friend at the convenience store.
I'm not like, trying to be your friend.
Can someone hang out with me, please?
Or a wicked chatty cashier that's like, tattoos, huh? I like tattoos. Shut up.
The Exorcist is my favorite horror film of all time.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't give a fuck, dude. I don't care. Just, yeah. That's the grumpy me coming out. That's how we're going to end this podcast, is with me. I fucking hate people.
Again, now my ultimate goal, I eventually broke Raj down and got him to watch Scrubs. Now I'm going to work on It's Always Sunny, because he's literally living out another scene there when they move to the suburbs and they're... One dude's just getting so tired of the neighbor always being like, hot out today, isn't it? And the last day he's like, yeah.
That's my life, dude.
And closing the door behind him, like, oh, that Wally sure likes telling me it's a hot one when I know it's a hot one because I'm out there standing in the hot one.
I'll fucking kill you. Don't bother me. I don't want to be bothered at all. I fucking hate it. I'm such a fucking weird introvert. I'm not a small talk type of guy. Not at all. So don't do it to me, please. But on that note, I suppose we should probably get going, because after all, there's a lot of movies out there and somebody's got to watch them. So why not me or us, right?
You're the prettiest one in my collection so far.
Yo, wait a minute. What's that?
Something's sneaking around the corner.
Here we come.
I think it's the maniac.
Hold on. You better watch out when you hear that sound. It means that the maniac cop's around. Once upon a time, he was a super cop, but the bad guy threatened to make him stop. Put him in prison where they tried to kill him. But he broke out, now he's the villain. Bullets won't hurt him, I know it sounds like jive, but when I shoot him, he's dead or alive.
Set him on fire, I shoot him with an oil.
he'll show up in your jacuzzi. You can run him over, you can feed him poison, push him out a window and it only annoys him. You better believe me if they think I'm lying. When he show up,
yeah,
people start dying. He's out for vengeance and he can't be stopped. That's why they call him the Maniac Cop.
You have the right to remain inside.
Gonna think it's a cop on the beat, but don't be thinking about police protection, cause this is one cop with a bad connection. When he shows up, he's supposed to protect ya. The Maniac Cop is out to get ya. He's an anti-vigilante and they can't convict him, so watch out, Jack, cause you're the next victim.
Don't hang around if you see him coming, just pick up your feet and commit to running, and don't waste time dialing 911. Forget karate and forget your gun. Don't play hero, don't try to be brave. This dude's gonna show you to an early grave. He's out for vengeance and he can't be stopped. That's why they call him the Maniac Cop.
You have the right to a mortician. If you cannot afford one,
justice is one of a kind. He's homicidal and maladjusted, but when he busts in, your ass is busted. You won't get a ticket or pay your fine. Your might as well be dealing with Frankenstein. He's big and ugly with a busted jaw. You know he's the wrong arm of the law.
You better stay away from this man in blue, and don't call a cop cause he'll stop them too. They killed him once, but he came back. He's the mama maniac. So when you're out on the streets and you hear that sound, it probably means that Cordell's around. He's out for vengeance and he can't be stopped. That's why they call him the Maniac.
The Maniac.
Rock.
Right. Remain silent.